And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
And welcome to episode 22 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me tonight is Chris and Lawrence. Lawrence, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm fantastic, actually.
Chris?
I have a cold, but I'm good.
That makes two of us. this will be really interesting. Surprisingly, not the only thing Chris and I have in common on this episode, because in the last 7 days, both of us have seen AEW Live.
That we have.
So, this is gonna, which also explains why we were late on this episode. But you know what? We're giving you a bumper bonus episode for your listening pleasure this time, because we are going to go over not only episode 22 of AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Revolution, the pay-per-view from last Saturday. I'm just going to start this off by saying that I know that there was a dark just prior to the pay-per-view. I think it was last Friday night, in fact, is when they posted it. And I took one look at that match list. I said, fuck this.
Good. Yeah. Good. Finally.
I said, by that point, that I was yourself. Like... Yeah, at that point, I was like, you know what? Fuck this. There's no way I am watching this. But let's take this over to Revolution now, because prior to that, of course, the Revolution was part of... It was advertised as actually being part of the C2E2 comic book convention, which I was also an attendee of. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, the minute I walked in to the con floor, there's the AEW booth, and there's the Bucks and Cody doing a signing.
Oh, Lord.
So, and so I got to walk around. I waved. I you know, fist bumped with Brandon Cutler. Because he was there as well. And I wandered around, and I got to see, I sent you guys the pictures of the, I got to see the both wave one and wave two of the AEW figures. Good news, wave two features John Moxley, Pentagon Jr., and Rey Fénix.
Good.
So, and it looks like they're doing right by Fénix and Pentagon by giving them multiple heads and multiple hand gestures.
Nice.
And I guess, at least on Pentagon, they're doing multiple colors for him, too. I did not see that. That was not on display. His black and white outfit was on display there. But you know what? I am all in for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for that. They also are doing a limited figure based on a little bit of the bubbly. So fair enough. It's one of the earliest, you know, iconic moments of this promotion. So fair enough. But all I'm going to say is that I'm kind of telling the story out of order here. But all I'm going to say is I think overall it was a very good. And by the way, when I walked in on Friday, they were handing out AEW Dynamite branded string bags, and you could see them all over the con. Like people were using them.
Yeah, good branding opportunities there for them.
Yeah, they definitely seized on something, and it, my God, it worked at that con, especially, you know, the Sunday show. A lot of discussion about Revolution on the con floor.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Also, going to point out that on both Friday and Saturday night, there were a lot of AEW talents in the bar of the Marriott, which is actually attached to the to the Wintrust Arena. Now, that is not the hotel where the con was. The con was, you know, a block and a half away at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, on Friday night, I met, God, who? Well, I mean, I think I told you this. I met all of best friends, including Orange Cassidy. I am pleased to announce Orange Cassidy lives the fucking gimmick.
Oh yeah, 100%.
He lives the gimmick. His fist bumps were just kind of
the mesh. Yep, that
and,
he does
and,
that.
And he was talking about going to sleep before 11. So,
mm-hmm. Oh my god,
a very very freshly squeezed thing to do, baby.
Oh yeah, so it was. You know, Chuck Taylor, who I ended up giving a beer to, because I bring my own beer to the C2E2 drink ups, mm-hmm. because yeah, I'm not paying.
$10 for a beer.
I'm not paying, you know, $13 for an IPA. No, sir.
Oh, God, that's absurd. Oh, Lord.
But, so I ended up giving, one of my beers to Chuck Taylor, who also mentioned at one point, yeah, I'm thinking about, I'm still deciding whether or not I'm going to be at the show tomorrow. So it's like...
a very, very Dustin thing to say.
Yeah,
outright.
I didn't get a chance to talk to Greg or give him a beer either, because he was like mobbed with other people. But I did also meet in no particular order. I also met Christopher Daniels again. I've met him a couple times because both he and I have been published by the same comics publisher. It turns out.
What's up?
Oh, what the hell?
Oh yeah, comics based the imprint of Art Baltazar and Franco. Best known for Tiny Titans at DC. But Daniels and Kazarian have featured in a couple of their comics, and I had a one pager in an issue of theirs, so. In any event, so I met them. I also met Sammy Guevara.
Oh God!
Met Sammy Guevara. I met Scorpio Sky.
Mm-hmm.
I met oh God, who else was there?
Jungle Boy and Tony Khan, wasn't it?
Oh yeah! Oh, Tony Khan. Yes, I met Tony Khan. I met an actual billionaire, and I did, you know, briefly say hi to Jungle Boy too. I also met one other guy. I'm pretty much bound by honor to not say who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I met somebody on the AEW roster.
Oh.
So,
oh.
I'm bound by honor to not say who it was. So.
Yeah. I think I know.
But you know what? It wasn't the first time I've met this person either. So.
Yeah,
just the first time I've met this person in that state. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that works.
Does that work for y'all? So, but yeah, so it was really cool. The AEW guy. Oh, and Santana too. I fist bumped with Santana too. Bellman, it was a good show. He goes, yeah, thanks. You know, it was all good. So, between comic creators and AEW wrestlers, it was a good show. But let's talk about actual Revolution, which was live at the Wintrust Arena in actual Chicago, not Hoffman Estates. A theme we're going to return to later on in this program.
Oh boy.
First of all, I sent you guys the pic of where. Actually, I tweeted it out too at Struxaw Story Without the E in Style on Twitter. Me and my honeys, because she came with me. She braved this one out, even though she's not an AEW fan. She braved this one out, and our view, not bad at all. It turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was confirmed by two other friends of the show who, by coincidence, were both in the section next to ours, but I couldn't get to them because it was mm-hmm. so packed. That would be, of course, friends of the show, Dion of SOS Wrestle Talk, and the Cubs fan.
Oh. Yeah, and they're here that they made it in. So,
they was there. So the show started. It didn't start right at 6 when it said. They did have the match for Dark, Which we'll just do this now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's just
sure.
do this now. The first match of the evening, Britt Baker and Penelope Ford defeating the team of Riho and Yuka Sakazaki. This match was actually really good.
Good news. That's good to hear. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, it is on Dark now, so you can watch it. Yeah, they're really getting they really are trying to get Britt over as a heel. Riho and Yuka were workhorses in this match too, and of course they did the proper music for Yuka.
Yeah, they got it figured out finally. Yay!
So yeah, I definitely recommend. I definitely recommend that match on Dark. And then we go into the buy-in, which was the Dark Order, Evil Uno, and Stu Grayson defeating SCU through trickery and shenanigans. But in the midst of this, it brings out a surprise appearance of Colt Cabana in AEW. Yep. He is a free agent now.
Apparently not.
Well, I don't know how tied he is.
Because I don't know from what I heard. I heard he signed.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
he
signed as well.
Well, he was scheduled to be in New Japan these weeks. Of course, we all know that kind of got blown the fuck up.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if that's specifically because it got blown up that he decided, well, okay, might as well just sign on this dotted line and be super official now, but
yeah, I'm
we'll
not,
wait and see what happens.
I'm not sure, but I mean, and of course, this would come into play later on this program. But but Cabana, of course, was getting overwhelmed as well. So out comes as the Exalted One, Christopher Daniels, and of course, we all knew it was him because he's done this shit before. Playing dress up like when he did he dressed up as Phoenix against Pentagon that one time. Actually, a couple of times he did that, I think.
Once or twice, at least, I think.
Yeah, so that match was kind of but, it did what it needed to do, I guess, to introduce Colt Cabana to the AEW crowd. And so with that, not too long after that, we started the show right off. The first match fucking sucked. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
I thankfully had gotten my food at that point, so I was too busy devouring the gargantuan burger that I got at Gorilla Mall because I was at in Los Angeles with a friend of the show, friend of Strong Style Story, mostly Jack Heartless, celebrating his birthday there at Gorilla Mall over in. I don't remember the exact neighborhood, but it is in the Los Angeles area. They're in Cali.
He's a friend of this show, too. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, just because mostly, he's featured, to an extent more on the New Japan side of the fence than with the AEW show, so that's why I kind of went to that first. Either way, though, good burger place. They do some crazy stuff, some wrestling-themed and rock and roll kind of metal stuff as well. I'll send a picture to you guys of what their menu looks like, which is kind of insane on both
what
do with their burgers and prices. So
I don't think I got that because I may not have seen it because of course I was paying attention to this being in attendance.
No,
so I'll have to look at
that.
Back to the match. This match fucking sucked.
That was
Jake Hager versus defeating Dustin Rhodes by ref stoppage. This was awful.
I give Dustin credit for trying to drag something out of this fucking asshole. This guy is one of the most unmotivated looking dudes. Jake Hager, I tell you, he's just it almost just looks like he's collecting a paycheck out there. It's just, I don't know. He just offers not a whole lot to me to really invest in. I know they're trying to build them up now, I get that, but this is just not good. It wasn't entertaining. It wasn't one of those performances by him where you go, oh my god, he's a monster. I don't know, it didn't really get him over. I didn't think that well anyway.
I could clearly see, even from where I was. Of course, we do have the the monitors up there. He was blown up inside of 5 minutes.
And absolutely.
For an undefeated, MMA fighter.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Yeah, well, I guess that shows you, the guy's used to beating up guys in a few minutes with some breaks between rounds, so it's kind of a different story when you're going back to wrestling,
Yeah, and plus the whole thing with his wife, I assume that his wife was somebody in WWE at some point?
No.
That's, who is that?
She's just a woman.
Okay.
Somebody.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think Catalina White, I believe, is her name.
Okay.
I just looked that up.
Okay. you're more prepared than I am, clearly.
But yeah, they had a really cringe kiss spot, which
spots in 2020, just no.
Can we just stop that? Come on. It's just stupid.
I'm 100% with you on that.
It never even worked. It just doesn't work any. I mean, I don't know. People react to it, so I guess it does work, but it's like, I don't know. It's just stupid. It just doesn't. It's not like what a babyface should do. I don't know.
Kiss spots in 2020 are just, read the fucking room, guys. Seriously.
Yeah, it was lame. It was a lame thing on top of a pretty lame match. Dustin Rhodes, he tried his damnedest to get something entertaining, and I think maybe that's what stemmed out of that moment, and he just kind of gauged it wrong, and it wasn't good. I don't know. Hager's submission, it's a little underwhelming, but
a standing triangle choke or something?
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't. It doesn't really pop out. He has like a really definitive, cool looking finish, I guess. But whatever. Let's move on. This match wasn't very good. No really need to dwell on it. And that's funny because it's really, you think this match shouldn't have not been opener over the next match that probably should have been the opener.
Yeah, let's get to this match because this match really brought it back almost immediately. Darby Allin defeating Sammy Guevara. I love this match.
An absolute car crash style type of... of match, yeah. Five minutes long. I love it.
Again, why didn't this open the show exactly? I knew they were probably scared that Hager and Dustin were not going to be, getting people to rush out to their seats and stuff like that. But if you're talking about opening the show with a bang, this had pretty much all the elements on it. To be fair, that might as well be considered the opener. You could have just put the Dustin Hager thing on the buy-in portion as well too.
They probably should have put it on the buy-in, honestly. If not dark, because Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara was everything that Hager versus Dustin Rhodes was not. I absolutely love this match. It was, as you said, a car crash juniors match. What more could you ask for,
They were bumping. they were bumping.
Yes, they were.
It was really good. And it appears like they're going to continue this too, because Darby called out Guevara on Instagram, and Guevara said, "I'm gonna kick your ass, bro." He's like, "Okay," responded to it. So it's like, yeah, I think this is gonna be continuing for a little bit.
Good. They've got some wheels and things that they can do with this still.
Yeah, there is. It was definitely definitely livened the crowd up. It was a very good match. So is this next match. well, we're going to have some discussion about this match. This was the AEW World Tag Team Championship match between Kenny Omega and Adam Page, the champions, versus fellow executive vice presidents Nick and Matt Jackson, the Young Bucks. I'm just going to lead off with this by saying I cannot remember the last time I heard the Young Bucks get booed in the U.S.
It was there was a very interesting a turn of events, and credit to these guys for actually being able to elicit that response, because that is, like you said, a very hard thing to do with these guys. The Bucks, you know, they just, you know, they've been revered everywhere by this kind of smart crowd, or whatever you want to call it, for years now, and to be able to kind of turn that crowd on them in an effort to drive more story into this match, it was pretty fantastic, and I enjoyed the hell out of this match, as I'm sure many people did. I was really taken aback at how much this ended up being, like, great. I really didn't think this was going to be nearly as good as it was, but these guys really put their boots on here, and they just they told a story, and that's what I think. You know, sometimes with these guys, it's missing a little bit, but they decided it's like, hey, you know what, like, we can tell a story here while we have all this talent.
Yeah,
and they really hit a home run with this.
Yeah, I do agree entirely with that. And here's what I'll say, just from my own perspective of things, is that if there is one thing that this proved, is that even though they're selling a ton of merch and everything else on their end of things, the Young Bucks work best as heels. And they worked that throughout this entire match. And it's just, it shows, like, how much more they can do with that compared to just baby faces. I
100% agree with you. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, in a just world, the Young Bucks would always have been heels.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree entirely. It's one of those things, for me in particular, like, with Young Bucks matches, you have pretty much the conversation of, if you've seen one of these types of matches, you've seen them all. And on a TV standpoint, I get that. But from just a personal experience with them, like seeing them a couple of years back when PWG was still in receipt and they were still basically shitbag heels working with Bullet Club and stuff like that, it was that sort of attitude and that kind of style that they worked against the Lucha Bros in like night three of Bola of 2016 that got me to be like, okay, I get why people like these guys now. Like, I may not always be my cup of tea, but I get it. And I think this match proved that, but more so on the national stage than anything else. But that said, though, like, out of everybody involved in this, too, and we're giving all four guys a ton of credit, but Adam Page, man, like, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Like, that he stepped up tenfold on this one.
Star-making performance from him. Star-making performance from Adam Page in this match. This might have just made him and minted him as a potential next top guy. I mean, this guy is starting to get some crazy, crazy reactions from the fans now.
Yeah,
they like this guy. They found, I don't know if this was the original intention of the story or it's where they ended up having a drift with it, but this guy ended up being really the sympathetic character in all this.
This is true. That is really the whole bit of it. And that,
well,
and
that's been the narrative we've been pushing on this show, too.
Right. And I think it had finally started really drifting in that direction. And I think they just kind of leaned into it here. And I'm really glad they did, because I think it really just, it makes more sense. Because like, you know what? Adam Page had some points. He's had a point with these guys. These guys have basically overlooked him all this time. And he's kind of been like the little brother of their group, essentially. And they just kind of never really took him seriously. They kind of pretended they did, but they didn't. You know? Mm. And, you know, they expected him to just sit back and wait and you know, just be, you know, that guy while they're doing their thing. And no, he wants to be his own guy. And that was really the main story of this. It's not complicated. It's not hard.
Right. And, well, I mean, okay, let's go through the evolution of this then. Because let's not forget, with Adam Page, he was the last survivor of the decade in Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Me and my friend Mike were just talking about the decade.
Yeah, but he was the last survivor of it. You know, he was the last one to remain. He joined Bullet Club when both Adams, Page, and Cole went to New Japan as part of the Bullet Club. Only one of those Adams got over, and it was not Adam this Cole.
This is true.
Yep.
And then also, remember how he got his main event spot at All Out to go, up against Jericho was through a battle royale. He didn't even have a wrestling match. He was in a Royal Rumble type match.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he was getting, and plus, let's face it, the Hangman thing always fucking sucked. I'm sorry. It always sucked, and it was really edging towards this could go very bad very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think y'all know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
But at the same time, yeah, Adam Page, you're right. I mean, what was his big shtick going into All In? He got carried away by ghost penises.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whilst Kenny Omega is getting to have a high-profile match against Pentagon Jr. that should have been Pentagon versus Okada, but, I'm going to be forever salty about that.
And then you have the Bucks involved with Ibushi against Rey, Bandido, and
Rey Fénix, Rey Mysterio, and, mm-hmm. and Bandido. I always thought Flamita kind of got hosed there, but anyway, that's a side point. So yeah, I mean, Adam Page really was he really was kind of like the afterthought member of the Elite, even after Marty Scurll wasn't even in the picture anymore.
He was the guy to be funny in their videos for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they played that out on television, I think, really well. And his frustration boiled over, and he's like, I'm gonna do what I want. If I want to drink of some beers on TV, I'm gonna do it. I'm just gonna do my own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all agree that the Bucks pretty much drove him to drinking. let's face it.
Yeah. He's like, I'm fucking tired of you guys. Like, mm-hmm. you guys are pissing me off. Like.
So, no, I mean, Adam Page was so over. Every last thing he did, the crowd was eating it up. Like, even when Omega prevented Page from doing some extracurriculars against Nick Jackson, the crowd turned on Omega. It's like, why are you doing this?
Right, yeah. Right, right. And then Kenny doesn't even save Adam from getting fucking tombstoned on the fucking ramp in return. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. It's like, wow, it's like, and you wonder, and it's like, you wonder why the guy wants, is like, looking at Omega sideways after the match, and it's like, why shouldn't he
Well,
fucking...
right, mm-hmm. it's like we kept asking, why is Adam Page the heel in this? And it turns out, no, he really wasn't.
Nope. And I think, again,
but,
was an audible call, it was a very good one done by everybody involved, and
audible?
They did their jobs
with
this match. That's what I'm saying. If it was an audible, I think it was a very good job done by everybody involved in terms of playing towards that direction that we've just been talking about the past couple of minutes here.
I love it because it's like I loved it because it was like your Bucks are sitting there expecting Adam Page to just go and shake their hands after the match, after they almost tried to fucking end the guy's career. and he's like, get the hell out of here. I ain't shaking your hands. Like, fuck you.
Now, of course, I went down to get a beer during all this, so I had to have my honey tell me what happened, because I went to go get a beer after this.
But the match had fantastic spots as well. Okay. I did actually give it a nice little nod to the Bucks being shitbags trying to do the Golden Trigger and then Kenny kicking out at one out of it, because, why wouldn't he at this point?
No, sure. I mean, the match, too, is just the work. It was just wild. I mean, it was just a very, very good
and the
tag team match.
And the crowd lost it for Adam Page doing One Winged Angel, too.
Yeah.
The one-winged Pegasus, I believe, is what they called it.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know what? I can live with that. Now, unfortunately... But hold on. Wait. Time out. Now I have to kind of shit on this parade a little bit.
Because of the Meltzer purbly, as I like to call it.
I didn't even need a Meltzer purbly to shit on everybody's parade. First of all, this match was also 20 minutes too goddamn long. It should not have gone that long.
Really? You think? This is one of the rare cases where I actually wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I actually was okay. I felt that the length of the match, sure, it was timely, but I don't think it was one of those matches where I felt, wow, this has been 30 minutes. It was more like, wow, they basically said it was a 30-minute mark at the show itself.
Yeah, no. It felt every bit of it because... Differing opinions, in my case. But, of course, you know, I was also there live, and I was having, you know, not to get too personal, I was having some issues with one of my legs in my seat, too, so I kept having to move. So that was kind of making it a little actually painful to watch, you know, not because of the match.
Actually painful to watch
because I am an old and my body is breaking down. But also you mentioned about how they told a story, and one of my biggest criticisms, of course, and this is, you know, an evergreen criticism of the Bucks and Kenny Omega, is that they try to bring emotion out of things. It's like they're pretending to emote, you know?
Yes.
It's like,
oh yeah.
And I could see that on display. Believe it or not, Adam Page was fucking natural about it.
Right.
He the emotions he was showing actually seemed like they were natural. Like not that, like, yes. they were gurning and play acting, you know?
Why am I so violent?
Yeah, or, yeah, you know, just your typical Kenny Omega match, you know?
The Gargano, why am I so violent face.
Well, that's another great example of what I'm referring to, you know? When you're pretending to emote, you know, instead of having, you know, it's just like, you know, that New Japan match in San Francisco, you know, when Kenny was going up against, you know, Cody, and we could just tell he was trying to, you know, wring every emotion he could when we just had an actual shoot, you know, a genuine display of emotion happening in the match previous.
Side note from this, just because I think it's actually hilarious in hindsight, pointing this out, the weekend of Los Angeles that I was there, the day before Revolution, a couple of us, Jack, myself, and a few others, ended up going to Suburban Fight because, well, Warhorse was there, which, you know, that was fun to do. But
we love us some Warhorse.
Yeah, but as it turns out, like, who was amongst the audience with us in a gay bar in Los Angeles where Street Fight Wrestling was happening? Josh Barnett. And as Jack decided to point out, hey, doesn't matter what happens during this entire card, as long as we stand at least 5 feet behind Barnett, we should be fine. And Josh kind of looks back behind Ola, kind of like stretches himself a little bit just to kind of be like, yeah, I got this kind of thing. And I'm just like,
you know,
well, at least he has a sense of humor about this.
You know,
good for him.
You know, he's an alt-right chud, but I guess he has his moments, so...
That was a moment. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he has his moments. I am actually looking forward to Bloodsport, though, so... But anyway. Okay, and then lastly, no, this is not the greatest tag team match of all time. I'm sorry. let me put a stop to that one.
Let's not go on hyperbole. It was a great tag team match and one of the better ones that we may have seen within like the North American spectrum.
It was a great match. I liked the match. I think it went on too long. That's my biggest complaint. And, you know, again, the emotions that Kenny and the Bucks try to show seemed disgenuine, you know, seemed not genuine, especially compared to Adam Page's.
Fair.
Yep, I agree with you on that. No doubt.
So
good at that. But from there, though, and I know we spent a good amount of time on this and with reason, but we definitely still have a little bit more of the card to cover as well. Which, oh god,
as well as an entire episode of Dynamite to go through too. So
yeah,
so let's move it on. The next match, the AEW World Women's Championship, Nyla Rose defending and defeating against Chris Statlander, who has some name value in Chicago because she is the AAW Women's Champion. However, unfortunately, this match really was not great. And it was okay. I didn't dislike it, but it really could have been better.
They got the crowd back by the finishing stretch of it. But he could also tell, and I think Loris made that point on our own like private Twitter chat, just mentioning specifically that you could tell Statlander was coming back from, like, you know, minor injury or something like that, because the timing wasn't there for either one of them, unfortunately.
She had the flu, they said.
Oh, okay, yeah, that will mess anybody up.
She looked every bit like a person that is just recovering from the flu and looked, like, dehydrated and gassed.
Yeah, I could even tell live, it does not flow well. Again, I did not dislike it, but I have, you know, obviously we have all seen both Chris Statlander and Nyla Rose have much better matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the next time that they go up against each other, we'll get a better outing from it. But this one was more of it was okay. Not what we expected it to be. Hopefully don't nail it next time. So simple as that. But yep. I'm glad that the women's title did get defended on the main show. That's a big thing that does need to continue happening, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. And I think it will. So, well, we hope, anyway. This next match, I think we're all going to be unified on this match, too.
I went to the bathroom during a majority of this match, and I am glad because
that must have been
allowed me time to look at Twitter. And allow me to look at Twitter, and by God, the memes that flew across the very moment when we just saw that.
Chris, number one, it's good to know that you take your phone to the toilet. Number two, it's also good to know that you had a very long cleanse going on.
Yep.
And so I said something to set my phone off because the Googles is trying to talk to me now.
Google is very interested in Chris's bowel movements.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, God. It's taken 22 episodes, and we finally talk about our bathroom habits on this show.
It was only a matter of time, Chris.
Anyway, the match in question, the very long, drawn-out feud between Cody Rhodes and MJF. God, this match fucking sucked.
You know, it's funny. I think if you either loved this match or you just thought this match was the drizzling shits, I found this match to be the drizzling shits.
Yeah, that makes three of us then in this
This was the antithesis of what Cody's been doing in his matches in AEW. There was none of that, like, perceived drama there. None of that, really, that anger and emotions. It's like MJF, you know, he got color, but it just never really, like, felt like anything. It didn't really amount to anything. It just wasn't good. I think MJF just isn't good. He's just not good.
Stop acting like he's good. Please, can we just stop this in 2020 at this point?
Oh my God, he was terrible. This might have been one of his worst performances, and I'm sure he would say some edgelord thing about me if.
It's okay. He'll just flip off another 7-year-old and go on and pop up on TMZ, basically. Stick yourself relevant.
Look at me, the tryhard.
Yeah, especially with a lot of his time-wasting bullshit at the beginning of the match, too. It was... there is nothing good to say. And, of course, let's not forget to bury Cody Rhodes' fucking tattoo. Jesus fucking Christ.
Ooh-hoo. I thought it was a temp at first. I really thought it was
a temp. I was hoping it was a temp. I was like, there's no way. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. He really went there.
You know, when
questionable white people decisions, man. I swear.
Yes, sir. Questionable white people decisions, the wrestling promotion. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because when I was at the AEW table on the con floor, my honey was telling me I should, like, try to see if they need, like, you know, writers or a social media person. And I was like, I told her straight up no, because I like the freedom that I have to bury them when it's warranted. And
yep.
My God, was it warranted with this match.
Oh, man. Jeez. It stunk. It really just stunk out the joint, I thought. I just think that it just really, this ended on a whimper. I mean, really it did. And thank God, like, they kind of moved on from it very quickly on the episode of Dynamite.
Yeah.
because this was just a pretty shitty end to what ended up being a very underwhelming feud with those two. I mean,
for the length of time and the length of time, the amount of TV time, the whipping segment, which I still think was one of the worst decisions to have made on TV. Okay, the cage match was pretty fucking good.
Yeah,
the cage match was arguably the highlight of this entire.
Yeah, I think it was. Sure. Maybe the cage match should have been the finish. You know.
Wardlow is actually good.
Yeah, go figure, right? Just it's a large man who did large man things, and it worked out. And Cody did work with him. Just basically, guys, Cody MJF sucked. I'm glad it's done. Let's move on, because what we moved on to was saving grace of the show.
Hold on, wait. Now, time out. I can't remember. I know that they showed this twice during the show. I don't remember if this was after this match or the one we're about to discuss, where they are advertising a return of the War Games, but of course they can't call it the War Games. So now it's called Blood and Guts.
Show name for Newark in Jersey, but I do believe the word War Games did pop up during the advertisement, so...
I don't think it did! I think they just advertised the fight. It was two cages, and, rings under a cage, but I don't think they can actually say War Games.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I mean, regardless, it's still gonna happen in a couple of weeks, and... we'll wait and see where that goes.
Yeah, I guess we will.
Let's just talk about this next match, guys, because we've been waiting to do this for a while.
Yeah, four words, match of the night. Pac going up against Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy broke the fuck out. I mean, he was already the most over guy on the roster, except maybe Mox. But holy fucking shit.
I just think a lot of people don't realize that Orange Cassidy's actual wrestling style for a while is very similar to Pac's. Like,
yeah,
it plays into it really, really well, actually.
I mean, this dude came from Chikara, bro. I mean, yeah.
like a humble fire ant, and God bless Excalibur for that reference during that match.
I didn't hear that because I was,
live. Yeah. God. Jesus Christ.
Phenomenal Chikara reference right there to his former identity once upon a time.
You know what? I remember leaning over to my honey, and she did not like or get Orange Cassidy at first. She was fully in the tank for Pac, though. After her first time of seeing Pac, which was the Pac versus Omega Iron Man match.
Yeah.
She was fully in the tank, which we'll reference this again later. I just leaned over and I said, if Orange Cassidy actually wins this, this place is going to fucking explode.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen, but my God.
It was
That is a legit match of the year
So, like, yeah, definitely. Like, and can we just talk about, like, how fucking crisp that Superman punch was on top of it?
Oh my god. That was one of the best fucking things on this whole show, was Orange Cassidy just waylaying Pac with the Superman punch out of nowhere.
And credit to Pac, too, because he sold that like he almost died on his feet on top of it.
He was so good here. He made Orange Cassidy look like a fucking $1 million.
Can we also talk about the bump that Pac took for the air raid crash?
Right. Yeah. Another, again, yeah.
Yeah, everything about this just clicked. Very, very fun match. I think it's one of those circumstances, too, where the timing on the card helped it even more, but it also one that could have possibly been like the best possible opener to like a North American show if they decided it had gone that route. Regardless, though, fantastic match. Very much enjoyable.
They were both, it was like the perfect polar opposites for each other. Mm-hmm. It was just the perfect, like, they were perfect foils for each other.
And the best part about it is that they still left it open-ended enough to visit this at some point in the future, and boy, when that happens.
Yeah, yeah. And on that note, let's not forget the, you know, of course, best friends were there to lend moral support, but a shock appearance by Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix helping Pac out. We have complained quite a lot about the treatment of Penta and Fénix on this show and their nonsensical heel turn, but we're going to table most of this discussion, but you know what? I remember, again, thinking out loud, it's like, you know, get Pac and the Lucha Bros together. You know, I'm with this. And,
We'll touch base on that momentarily.
And hold that thought. So, yeah, this is legit a match of the year candidate for me, Pac versus Orange Cassidy. And apparently my dog agrees with me because my dog's making noise about it now, too. Mm-hmm.
From there, though, we do have the main event, in which it is John Moxley, eye patch wearing and everything coming out, and the champion Chris Jericho, who decided to go super ultra extra in this entrance in the best way possible and gets himself a full-fledged choir to sing Judas, which...
That was amazing live. I'm just going to say that.
It sounded really, really good on TV, too. So, yeah, just 100%. Shout out to Meredith Burr. To Meredith, I believe. I'm trying to remember the Twitter handle for her here, because I've had her followed on Twitter for a little while, so I remember when she did the initial, like, a cappella of Judas, just in a random win, and I guess Jericho got wind of it, and that's how this whole thing came to happen.
I'm sure Jericho got wind of it because she tagged Jericho.
True. Yeah, of course, but...
But, I mean, again, you know, shoot your shot, and sometimes it works out, so, you know.
Yeah,
but, this trend of the crowd singing Judas, too. I mean... Yes, he's the biggest heel in the company, but still, you got to admire that, you know?
Yeah.
Commitment to the craft.
But anyway, what did y'all think of this match?
It was pretty good. It kind of felt like more of like a brawl, you know, and like a in a sense mm-hmm. of, you know, it was like, it really felt like a fight. You know, it wasn't like the best wrestling match in the world, but that's really not what it was supposed to be. And, you know, it got, you know, things got really kind of crazy when Mox got posted there by Jericho. I think Mox was a little, actually kind of like,
woozy there for a little bit. Yeah.
He definitely got
had to buy time for a good like 2-3 minutes just to let him get his bearings back, because I do think he got shoot knocked out there for a moment.
He definitely got his bell rung, and you could tell you see the scar on him now, so yeah, he definitely, I mean, he's got stitches there. So that was a hard way. That was hard. Boy, AEW going all in on these hard way
Yeah, I mean, but But I do think that it lent to the match itself and Moxley's eventual kind of comeback from it. As Lawrence mentioned, it may not have been the best wrestling match, but they were still hitting the beats that they needed to hit with the story, still giving an entertaining brawl overall, playing with the inner circle, trying to, you know, do chicanery and fuckery all aboard. And then eventually with the big reveal that, hey, Mox could see for a while now, and, you know...
Which anybody who watches New Japan would have known that, but, you know.
But still, yeah.
Let's face it, John Moxley wrestled Minoru Suzuki with an eye patch on. What chance did Jericho have?
I mean, if we're
going to talk about, you know, heel chicanery, I would put, you know, I think Suzuki-gun does have the edge over the Inner Circle, I have to say.
Talking
about heel chicanery, but so yeah, I mean, it was a very good match. It was not. It was probably like the number three match of the night, if I had to say.
Yeah. That's fair, but fair place to put it, I would say. Yeah,
maybe number four because Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara.
Yeah, interchangeable between three and four. Your mileage may vary, if you will.
Yeah, no, it was still very good though. I'll tell you what, that they unleashed those T-shirts right at the end of the show, and boy, there were so many on the floor on the con floor at C2E2 the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, plus, you know, the post match promo from Mox, it was all good. It was a good match. It did what it had to do. And I think, you know, it was time. You know, Jericho did quite a lot with that belt in the, how long was it? Well, gosh, 6 months, you know, since Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. Which is why I'm okay with this change happening, because it's on that basis of, hey, now at this point, the other heels that are within the company, top heels like Pac and such, they can go chase after the title at a certain point now too, with a babyface champion rather than kind of burning through the face challengers. So it's a good transition point. Moxley's post-match promo stuff was really fun to kind of emphasize specifically, you know, how much this means to him and the company and et cetera, et cetera. So did a good job with that. So
Did he hold the WWE title? I honestly don't remember.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
because all three guys in the Shield have held it at least at one point.
Okay, I wasn't sure, but also let's not forget now Mox is another two belts in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yep. Two belts is the hot trend in 2020, Jeff.
Yeah. Turns out. But, you know, at the same time, let's also, you know, give a eulogy for Chris Jericho's title reign, you know, the inaugural title reign of this belt, and how he went out of his way to put guys over, even if he was beating them, you know, like Darby Allin in the, what was it? Was it this? That was like the second episode of Dynamite, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
second or third. Yeah,
he was the first title defense that he did, I believe. Yeah, okay. And he put over Darby Allin. He put over Jungle Boy Huge.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to put over Scorpio Sky, but yeah.
Which I mean, it is what it is. But at the same time, like, he's been working closely with Sammy, with Santana and Ortiz as well, and they've gotten over considerably, being part of his machinations within the Inner Circle as well, for sure. Like the memes of Guevara
and Oracle
are fantastic on top of it too. So it's just like, no, he's done a lot of good to help grow the company within this first year, and I think Moxley is the right person to take those next steps and start helping another portion of the brand and a few of like its younger heels grow into it as well too, with performances like that. We'll wait and see as to where it goes on the upcoming weeks, but we do go from Revolution, we eventually have to get to Dynamite, which is what this show is normally about, as it is. We're kind of giving the extended edition because, you know, two of us actually got to be in places for this stuff.
But how do you rate Revolution overall, Lawrence?
I'd say a solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, 7's what I'm thinking as well. It had enough good to overweigh the bad, but the bad did drag it down just a little bit to be on that sort of grade.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be higher than that. I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10, just because, against all odds, my honey enjoyed the show. So, you know, she's not an AEW fan, so that's a success right there,
right?
In my opinion. So, but as Chris brought up a good point, this is Boom Goes the Dynamite. So let's go live to episode 22 of AEW Dynamite, live from the First Bank Center in Broomfield, not Denver, Broomfield, Colorado. And Chris, you are there.
Yes, I did indeed go to that from my area where I live over here in the Littleton region, if you will, which is southwest of downtown Denver. That took about 45 minutes or so to get there, so bit of a drive, but Broomfield is about 20 minutes northwest of Denver, so they have the First Bank Center there. Got there early enough. People were already lining up because meet and greets were happening at around the same time that they were letting people in through the doors. As it turns out, two friends that I know within the cosplay community over here, they know Brandon Cutler, because both Cutler and the one guy that I know, Jesse, they both done the same character out of, I think it's World of Warcraft, I want to say. I don't remember the exact name, but they've done the same person kind of thing. And Cutler, I think, was impressed by, like, Jesse's version of it. So I'm like, kind of talked to Laura and Jesse about it. And was like, I'll just go to the meet and greet and grab you to something from Cutler in this case. So I got, like, they give you, like, 8x10s of each of the guys that are there for the signees, which were Nyla Rose, SCU, and Brandon Cutler for hours. But just because I wanted to get to the arena after getting this all done, I just went to Cutler's, got a quick picture with him. We talked for a couple moments, had him sign the thing for my friends Laura and Jesse. And then from there, I found my seats and ended up pretty much watching the entirety of the show. I sent you the photos of it. Like, I had the seats were really, really good in the arena overall. You could not have gone wrong anywhere that you were at, to be honest, in terms of where you were sitting. So, and the building itself wasn't a full sellout by any means, but ringside was sold out, and the areas where the hard cam was showing, they were sold out as well. So that looked really good on TV, I would assume, in that regard.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention too, at Revolution, did they have the bracelet? They didn't have the bracelets that they did at Revolution.
No, they didn't.
Those weird RFID, you know, color change bracelets.
Yeah, I think that might be just a pay-per-view thing at this point, and but that's fine, because I thought that was a nice touch.
Right, but a couple of things. Number one, Chris, I think we said this privately, but I think we could publicly say this. So, as Hoffman Estates is to Chicago, Broomfield is to Denver.
Yeah, pretty much. And there was even a funny note about that with Justin Roberts a couple of minutes before we went live on the show. He kind of was just like gauging the crowd, seeing how everybody was doing, so on and so forth. And then he's all like, yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, I know we're in Broomfield right now, but is it all right if I refer to you guys as Denver going forward? The crowd cheered accordingly. So like, all right, cool. We'll do that.
And then he gets undermined by by half the AEW talent. But anyway, but the other thing is that, Chris, you've said in the past that really, you know, bar the occasional house show, WWE and Ring of Honor and all that never really hit the Denver area.
Not really, no. WWE will roll into town at least, I think, once a year. They'll try to at least. Sometimes we'll get TV episodes like every 2 years or so, I want to say. But yeah, Denver, surprisingly, even with its population, the wrestling scene here isn't up to par, I think, with a lot of different places, which I think is unfortunate because we do have, I feel like we have enough resources at this point. It's just a matter of kind of growing the talent. But then again, I also see what the local scene kind of looks like and some of the marks within it. And I'm just like, Yeah, I think I understand the reason why this isn't as thriving as some other places out there.
Wow, okay. But, I mean, what is that?
Listen, when the biggest indie promotion that you have around here has Vince Russo listed as your executive producer, yeah, let's just not into that any further than what we need to.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he lives out here in the state nowadays, by the way. So, oh, geez. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, so what does that mean? What do you think that means to you guys when AEW is coming to the Denver area so early, you know, when Dynamite is doing an episode so early in its run?
I think they're gauging what the audience over here is like to see if that's worth exploring in the future for more tours and stuff like that. And I do think that we gave them enough energy and such throughout this entirety of the show to where it could be likely that we might end up being a stop for them every once in a while, which would be cool to see, especially if they decide to do it somewhere in, like, downtown Denver outright, whether that's through the Denver Coliseum or even Pepsi Center, because those are options for sure.
Okay. So let's get with it, and we are live, of course. Your hosts, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur, and we start off with a promo, which I have been very vocal. I don't like when they start off with a promo, but I guess as it is the new champion, we can let this one slide.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a line, and there was a line in this, and I do like the line. I don't know how accurate it is, but I do like the line that when Mox said, "We brought pro wrestling back."
Mm-hmm.
I figure you guys might have some feelings about that.
I mean, I think from a certain sentiment in terms of for a general audience that's more on the casual spectrum, but that also at the same time hasn't liked a lot of the bullshit that WWE has done over the years, sure, I could see how they interpret it as that. I do think that that's not entirely true. But, you know, revisionist history and the like, to say the least. But on the same vein, AEW at the very least is trying to somewhat be a little bit of a different option than what we've been seeing on TV over the last two decades. So I'll give him props for that, but I do think it's more of an over-exaggeration than anything else in that regard.
You know, it's funny that you mention that, because one of the notes I have here, especially when during Jericho's bit, is that it seems like in a very many ways the audience at AEW is, and maybe even the on-screen product in some ways in AEW, is really seeming like it is trying to go back to the Attitude Era, not just WCW but WWF as well. In some respects. I mean, some of the crowd reactions, especially during Jericho's part of this, which I do want to talk about Jericho's bit. Lawrence, what do you? Am I off on this?
No.
Okay. So okay, but you know, of course, in the midst of Moxley's promo, Jericho and the entire Inner Circle come out. And of course, Jericho thinks that the Moxley era sucks ass. Which, yeah, who saw that one coming?
And then the crowd immediately chants "You suck ass" right back at him.
Which is what made me think about that was really the moment that I thought, you know, they really are trying to throw back to the Attitude Era. But they make a match for later in the night: Jon Moxley and Darby Allin against Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara, with the stipulation that if Mox can walk out on his own two feet, then Jericho will take a 60-day leave of absence from AEW. By an amazing coincidence, Jericho's band Fozzy begins a tour on April 16th, running through May 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Welp.
So, an amazing coincidence there. By the way, It's actually a two-legged tour because they just announced dates for July and August, including July 12th at Bottom Lounge in Chicago and July 13th at the Hi-Fi in Indianapolis, a great venue that I've seen Cool Keith twice at. So, good venue. But yeah, the tour starts in Savannah, Georgia on April the 16th and ends in Lincoln, Nebraska, May 9th. I said May 6th, May 9th.
There we go.
So, including a stop in Pittsburgh on May the 1st. And, nothing hitting. Oh, actually, Lawrence, May 4th in Buffalo at the Ironworks.
Oh, yeah. Buffalo is like freaking 5 hours away from me, dude.
Oh, is it really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Buffalo is up near almost like Canada, bro.
You're right.
Long ass drive.
I'm sorry. You're right. Okay. I got my geography confused. Chris, I think the closest Fozzie is going to hit you is either Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or Minot, North Dakota, or Sturgis, South Dakota too. So I think you're boned.
Yeah, it's all good. They were here in September, I believe, is what it was for, like, a Denver show outright. So I figured they're just hitting everywhere else that they hadn't yet. It's whatever. But anyways, tour information aside, we do eventually get a match to open things up after the opening promo is done, and that's Unsolved Issues from Saturday, which is the union of SCU, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpion Sky, and Cole Cabana against the Dark Order quartet of Alex Reynolds, Evil Uno, John Silver, and Stu Grayson.
The Beaver Boys getting a match on an actual match on,
yeah,
on,
I know.
On the main show.
That was exciting.
Yeah, how'd you feel about that, Lawrence?
I was very happy. I'm glad they got these guys going now. It's got something going for them now. I know the mask thing is a little corny, but it's good that they're actually on TV and they're actually doing things.
And this was Colt Cabana's in-ring debut for All Elite Wrestling, and he gets the win on Alex Reynolds with the Superman pin.
Yep, he does.
The match itself was kind of okay. I did like the public meltdown that Evil Uno had in the match.
Yeah, Evil, then he actually, after the match, he was like, you know, this isn't how it was supposed to go, and the Exalted One won't be happy.
Yeah, we have not gotten the Exalted One yet. Clearly not the
good inkling of who it probably is going to be.
Clearly not the only person we were advertised as getting, not getting today on this show. But following that, we had a recap from Revolution of the Omega Page versus the Young Bucks match, along with quotes from the dirt sheets.
Oh boy. Yeah, that was something. Of course they gotta quote their buddy Dave, and,
Well, I didn't see Dave. Oh, yeah, I did see Dave. Yeah,
yeah.
His was the last one. Yeah, his was the last one. I didn't notice Brian Alvarez at first, and then you know they try to go legit with a quote from Sports Illustrated. Chris, what was going on during that time?
Chris has gone to let his dogs out, so he cannot answer this question.
Oh, did I miss a message somewhere?
Yes, you did.
I did. Oh shit. Well, what's he doing letting his dogs out?
It's a good question.
Chris, this is why I have family members to let my dogs out.
Oh, goodness, yeah, no.
Yeah, we were basically
clawing at the door, so I had to literally...
Yeah, that's okay, we just spent a couple of minutes, we just spent a couple of seconds burying you.
Listen, I had my headphones on, I could hear everything. So, in terms of it, they were just basically playing that video package through the TV screen. So whatever the TV footage was, we were getting that on the, not the, like where the Titantron screens were, but there were two other screens on the arena that were at the top portion there that everybody could literally look up and kind of see exactly what was going on the TV feed side of the fence. So that's how we got that. But yes, I did see it in the self-relating accordingly to that. Yes. That was a thing.
That was a thing. And then Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, which is in no way redundant, joins on commentary once again for the second match of the evening. Big Swole squashing the bejesus out of Leva Bates.
Thank goodness. That was quick, easy, and Swole got over during it, which is completely fine by me.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really much to say about that. Although I do wonder what book Leva was trying to offer. I will say this. I did notice on a recent Dark that, like, Leva's really starting to, like, push back on Peter Avalon a little bit. Like, stop, yeah, stop being a, you know, don't be a dick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Was the book recommendation that week. But then, of course, lest we forget, Big Swole clobbering Peter Avalon as well. During this squash.
Good times.
And then speaking of self-flating, we got a recap of our fourth executive vice president, Cody Rhodes, versus MJF, the which was a god-awful mess. That led to a promo with Cody Rhodes.
Oh, my goodness.
Jesus Christ, that tat is still there. It's there. It's a thing.
Oh, it is real.
It is real. And in the midst of it, Cody tries to call out MJF to come look him in the eye, and that's not who shows up. A surprise appearance by one Mr. Jake Roberts.
Yeah,
who the hell saw that coming?
Nope. None of us. And yeah, Jake, he's wearing every bit of his years, but
he's sounding every bit of it, too. Yeah. His voice, God.
But, I mean, he's worked his way here at this point, and just what he decided to drop on us was just a holy shit. Like, if there, out of everybody who's gotten bodied in these past few episodes of Dynamite and in Revolution, I don't think anybody got as bad as Cody did that night. Because
Jake Roberts buried him and buried him deep. And even got a few jabs at Arn Anderson, too. Just buried him 6 feet under.
The Hail Caesar portion was just like, oh boy. Like, you knew where this was going the moment he started going, I'm not here to praise you. I'm here to slay you.
I come out to praise Caesar, but to bury him. As quoted in Julius Caesar by some dude from England in the 1600s.
Jake is a man. God, what a beast. He just comes out here just fucking absolutely shreds Cody. I mean, just cold clocked him on the microphone. And this is just wonderful. I mean, when he turned his back on him and, oh, that was just...
The line at the end basically saying, a wise man once told me, never turn your back on somebody you respect or you're afraid of, and immediately just turning his back on Cody while tossing the microphone behind him while walking out of the ring. Like, that is just, like, stone-cold killer shit right there.
My girlfriend was watching this with me, and she's, like, she doesn't know who, like, Jake Roberts is. You know, she's kind of still relatively new to wrestling. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, God damn, that was cold. Like, oh man, this is great. I love Jake.
The last time I saw Jake Roberts in a wrestling ring was that ECW pay-per-view where he was Tommy Dreamer's.
No.
And that was a god-awful mess. This was like the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, that's the less talked about Jake Roberts in the 90s, the better.
I mean, let's face it, most people, younger than me, recognize Jake Roberts as the guy on whom the Austin 316 promo was cut.
Yeah.
That changed, you know, the course of wrestling history. But
you got, you got 21, I got 22.
Yeah, right? So... you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, that was amazing. So he keeps promising that he has a guy. I think we all know who it is.
Yeah.
But he didn't show up.
I am very, very excited about this. Oh, my God.
I think we know who it is. I think we could pretty safely say it's Lance Archer.
Yeah, it's the right call if it's Archer or even if it's Brody Lee, because let's not forget the fact that Jake is still a tall motherfucker.
Because
you
Archer,
need somebody that's bigger, like as big or bigger than him.
Archer was already announced. Like his signing was announced. He's gonna show up on TV at some point with like a package. I think this was supposed to be a big surprise.
See, here's the thing, though. He was advertised as being on this show, and spoilers, he wasn't.
And the thing is, and here's the clue that they gave away. I don't know if you were looking at the AEW Twitter on Wednesday, Jeff, but they tweeted out a black picture just with the text, "It's Wednesday." And as Chris knows...
you know what it means.
You know what it means. And...
Okay, Brody Lee. Wait a minute. He was a WWE guy, wasn't he?
Luke Harper.
Luke Harper. Okay. All right. See, again, I have this WWE blind spot on certain things. So you're right. Yeah. You know what? I did not look at that, and I completely forgot about that. So.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that also strikes me in regards to that too is that eventually they're going up to upstate New York. I think it was Rochester is what they're running in a couple weeks.
They did advertise that. Yes,
that's the area that he's from for Brody Lee.
That's
probably where they're doing it. If anything,
that is a very good point.
So I'm excited. I am excited for it nonetheless, and. Also, this next match, after we got a quick recap of what Pac and Orange Cassidy did and just the magic that was a couple of nights ago, we have Chucky T out here, Big Dust, trying to defend his friend's honor by fighting Pac himself and just... interesting match. Like, I was very surprised at the amount of offense that Chuck got in the process of it.
Yeah, it was a good match.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good. I think I could safely say I liked what happened after it a whole lot more, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but you gotta give it, like, a Falcon Arrow landing. The deal was almost done. Even an awful waffle making an appearance here.
Oh, yeah. That surprised me.
Oh, my God. Off the second rope over, I think. That was brutal.
And I like the fact that it took a couple of seconds for Chuck to get the pin, and that's why Pac kicked out. So I'm just like, okay, the finisher's still protected in that regard there. But Moonsault misses. Brutalizer is locked in. Pac wins by submission. And then Trent gets in the ring to get in Pac's face. And then Orange Cassidy steps in front of him. And we were ready right there. And then this is going to go on. And then the Lucha Bros just take everybody out. And
El Triangulo de la Muerte.
Hell yeah.
Pac calling us scumbags was something I popped for. Not gonna
listen,
lie.
Listen, scumbags.
Hell yeah. Like I said, boy, you know what? And again, with his voice, you can take the boy out of Newcastle.
Right.
But...
We kept talking for a while how they needed to do something with all three of these guys that doesn't involve them just losing to the Elite, but here we are now, and boy, this is a trio we can all sink our teeth into.
You know what? And here's the thing is that we kept going on about why are the Lucha Bros heels? How is Pac the heel in his feud with Kenny Omega? You know what? It all makes sense if you realize that in AEW's Wacky World booking, the biggest qualifier for being a heel is going up against the Elite.
Somebody made a really good point on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, but boy, I tell you, AEW can have a hell of their own king of trios these days. And I really hope they do that.
If there's a company that could use a trios titles at this point, and these three guys as your opening champions to that,
Or even just do a tournament, you know, every year.
that would be perfectly acceptable.
But yeah, I am fully on board with El Triangulo de la Muerte. I'm not going to call it Death Triangle because I don't like that. I like saying it in Spanish. You know?
Yeah, Death Triangle is fine, but the Spanish version is an infinitely better name.
Yeah, and I am all about. I mean, yeah, it's another heel unit inside AEW, but you know, you know what? They don't even have to be heels because they were fucking over. And you know what? Even then, Chris, you could probably confirm. I still heard Cerro Miedos.
Oh yeah, 100%. That was still definitely a thing. I think these will be the guys specifically that are on such a scumbag level that they'll fight anybody, regardless of whatever allegiance it is. So
I mean,
it's fine.
I mean, even in the midst of that Pac versus Orange Cassidy match, there was still a huge Cerro Miedo chant, you know, when Pentagon came out. So
yeah, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I am very excited for this. I hope we don't get burned like we did with the Dark Order on this. I don't given the talents involved, I don't think we will. It's just whether or not the booking will support this,
mm-hmm.
which is always the biggest concern.
So, anyways, this next match. You guys can recap it as quickly as you want. I used it as my bathroom break and food break, to be honest.
Well, first of all, before that happened, there was a video promo with Sean Spears and Tully Blanchard asking for an internet search for his tag team partner. Now, despite the fact that friend of the show, O'Shea Edwards, has now thrown his hat into this ring, and hey, O'Shea, what's going on, man? Can we just fucking end this, please?
When you have to start putting out fucking hashtags to get yourself a tag team partner and continue, like, hopefully resuscitate your time in AEW, that's when you know it's bad.
I am seriously hoping that once the contract is up, this guy is shown the door. I really am.
Oh, yeah, they sure had buyer's remorse on that one. Oh, my God.
I mean, what the... He has done absolutely fuck all since that Cody match at All Out.
Yep.
Absolutely fuck all. Nothing of value.
No.
And has, you know, wasted the time and legacy of Tully Blanchard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a joke. I mean, holy, it's like I feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's just... He's just there. He's just kind of there. It's this is some sad stuff, man. I mean, come on, internet search for a tag team partner, like, good lord.
Just fuck off with that, Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
The next match, as Chris mentioned, MAGA Chud Jake Hager squashes QT Marshall. This match was awful.
Yeah, well, Marshall got some decent offense in.
Yeah, but it was still a bad match.
But Hager pretty much no sold it though.
Yeah, so it was a DQ squash. It was a DQ squash. Cody tries to make the save but gets beat down. Matt Jackson.
I got back just around the time that Matt Jackson showed up, and I'm like, where the fuck is Nick?
Yeah, Nick was not on this show. Neither was Kenny Omega, by the way.
Nope.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of interesting. The night after the pay-per-view, and
it's really weird.
So then Adam Page gets one of the biggest pops of the evening.
Yep.
And just, goes to town, floors Hager with that buckshot lariat, and then, gives the finger to Matt Jackson.
I just loved how casual he was about the whole thing until, like, just suddenly going at breakneck speed and then walking away with basically, like, $200 worth of beers in both arms.
Yeah. Since this is a stadium, that's only, like, 5 beers.
Yeah, pretty much. 5 or 6 beers, but still, it's just, like... And he even commented on Twitter about it, too. Yeah. Like, these people are just giving me, like, $100 worth of beer. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Yep, but there is no doubt that that was an anomaly in Chicago. In the nutty Chicago crowd, as the WWE commentators like to talk about.
Yeah.
So I've heard, but no, that was not an anomaly. Adam Page got one of the biggest pops of the evening, and especially when he flipped off Matt Jackson. Chris, can you confirm?
I think the sort of energy that Adam Page resonates is going to resonate, like, super well in these sort of western portions, like the Denver, Salt Lakes, and stuff like that, like, in the Wild West sort of scene, like, cowboy shit is a thing.
Yeah. So yeah. So I don't know. I think we're hitting a reckoning with the Elite right now, because, you know, now it's like they're getting buried on the common, you know, by you know, Jake Roberts is burying Cody. The crowd was completely turned against the Bucks in Chicago, and it even turned a little bit against Kenny, as we mentioned. Are we hitting a reckoning for the Elite in their own company?
I think it's still too early to tell, but
I mean, let's face it, the Elite work best when they're heels. I mean,
this whole idea of the babyface.
Yeah, this whole idea of the babyface Elite just seems to go against the whole Elite shtick, you know?
Mm-hmm. But we can explore that at some other point, because after this, well, we get MJF gloating about the win.
Whoa, hold on. There's some things before that. We got a recap of Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander. And we got some previews of matches coming up next week.
Oh, yeah, right, next week.
In Salt Lake City, including the in-ring debut of El Triangulo de la Muerte.
Right, they are in action next week.
And then, yes, we get an MJF video promo where basically he is just completely blowing off Cody Rhodes and going straight for Jon Moxley now.
Yeah.
Well, that's the intended path, so.
I mean, like you said, you know, now that we have a babyface champion, it makes sense that now we're going to get heels going off against him in Gesundheit.
Yeah, thank you.
But on that note, that leads us into the fifth and final match of the evening, in which Jon Moxley and Darby Allin go up against Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. And, of course, Mox is instantly attacked by Jake Hager, Santana, and Ortiz.
Masked goons at first, so people were weirded out for a second, thinking there were people just out of the crowd. But then, nope, Inner Circle members who do a good number on him, you know, beat him up, and then basically leave Darby on a one versus five situation, basically. And yeah. Darby Allin will take those odds every fucking time. Credit to him.
Yeah, and he really worked this match, too. It has to be said.
Again, cannot say enough. Like, I'm sure it came through on the TV wall, but people were in for Darby as well, too. Just the entire presentation and everything else. Just, yeah. That's a guy right there to be on the lookout for.
But, of course, you know, it was all too much, and Sammy Guevara gets the pin on...
Can we talk about the spot that led to that? Jesus, this is like one of the spots of the year.
Oh, yeah, go right ahead.
Darby Allin goes for the suicide dive onto Jericho, and Jericho perfectly times the Judas effect and elbows the airborne Darby and just knocks his ass out. What a freaking spot this was, man. That was like the coolest Judas effect spot yet. I mean, that was awesome.
Between that and then the coffin drop on the entirety of the Inner Circle, like, there were some really good TV moments there for that main event. And kudos to them in terms of booking that properly. So,
yeah, I can't be mad about that. But, yes, it led to, the Sammy Guevara pin. And then, of course, Mox, you know, conveniently shows up at the end of the match that he was advertised to wrestle in. Did not.
Yeah, he took out everybody. But then the Inner Circle did get he was trying to take out everybody, but then they were able to neutralize him, and they powerbombed him off the side of the stage and to a table. So,
yep,
the triple powerbomb.
Yeah. So how about that was a nice touch. I will agree with that. But so I guess we're gonna have to come up with another excuse for why Chris Jericho isn't on TV during the Fozzy tour.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't start until April, like you said, and we're still in March, so...
Well, that's true, but he needs rehearsal time and stuff. I mean, Lawrence, you know this. You're a musician. You know that rehearsal time is important.
Yeah, that's generous, but thank you, Jeff.
I'm trying to big up you, son. Come on, man. So, Chris, how did the crowd seemed to be really into the show. I mean, was it more so? Obviously, it comes across more so live than perhaps on TV.
Yeah, they definitely were into the show. People had a lot of fun. Overall, I liked the atmosphere of it as well. Nothing too crazy. Thankfully, no like dumb hecklers around my area either, like the one smarky smark who tries to oversmark himself type of person. So that was a good sign. There could have been a couple of them around it. I just know it wasn't in my section at least, which was nice. But yeah, between that and then the dark matches, which we did get, I thought it was a fun show. I thought it was definitely kind of an odd call where you didn't see any of the Bucks or Omega wrestle in either one of the shows, whether that was Dynamite or Dark. But, well, it is what it is. At the very least, there were some things of meaning and some big names that did come through into it. So,
yeah, I'm still a little confused about the whole advertising Lance Archer is going to debut and then doesn't.
I'm kind of thinking it seems like they were trying to hint that he's coming soon, but then not done a good job of basically saying that, you know, it's soon, not immediately, like after we announced it, because they do have a show in Houston coming up, and with Archer being from Texas, that feels like it would be a more proper place to do it on, kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree, but I could have sworn they actually said he was going to be debuting in Denver, but I could have been misreading that, so I could have sworn they actually said that.
I see what you mean, yeah.
But with that, as we always do, let's do the pros and cons. Lawrence, pros and cons.
The pros, Jake Roberts, easily. The Death Triangle stuff with the best friends kicks ass. Yeah, I mean, those are my main positives. Cons, MJF is just still hit. That promo was just like, whatever. I don't know. It's like enough with it already. On the Cody thing, it's just enough. And Jake, we had to see a Jake Hager match again.
That should be a war crime, honestly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where I pretty much end it with that.
Chris, since you were there live, give us the pros and cons perspective of being there live.
Yeah, I definitely am gonna say the Jake Roberts promo was a definite highlight, just given how unexpected it was and then just how stone cold blooded it was in the process of it. The Pac Chucky T match was pretty fun as well. Darby doing Darby Allin things, that includes selling as well. Just excellent work as per usual. Cons, I'm going to say just... The opening promo, while I understood why they did it, it definitely had a Monday Night Raw type of feel to it, which, we've been down that road one too many times before to open up a wrestling show, especially for anybody who's kept up with WWE for the 2000s and 2010s and probably the 2020s. Alongside that, just again, MJF just doesn't do anything for me at any point anymore. If he does for you, good for you, I guess. Try to get as much enjoyment out of it, because I don't feel like it's something that's going to be, you know, blasting or consistent or anything of that sort.
Well, I mean, you did ask that once he jobs to Cody, where's he go from here? Well, I guess we avoided that conversation, didn't we?
Yeah, to an extent.
As far as the pros and cons, Jake Roberts won the night to steal the gimmick from our good friends Dave and Lee at Days of Thunder. I am 100% in the tank for El Triángulo de la Muerte. I don't know how many more times I can say this, but I'm going to say it probably about 1,000 before it's all done. And I hope to God that they don't fuck this up. Like they seem to quite a lot whenever I get excited about something. Darby Allin put in another virtuoso performance. As far as the cons, I was, again, so really disappointed that there was no Lance Archer as advertised. I thought we were for sure we were going to see him tonight. Yeah, MJF, I just don't care. I mean, I could see them going to MJF versus Mox or Double or Nothing, but, you know, so far, that video promo did not make me excited for that one bit. And the Sean Spears thing, just fucking end this already, please. Put Sean Spears out of our misery, please.
Oh, yeah.
For the love of God. So, yeah, that's that. And next, episode 23 from Salt Lake City. A nice prime number there for us as we head into that. So that'll be, and we'll be recording that on time on Wednesday, back in our usual slot. Incidentally, the reason I couldn't make it on Wednesday, Wire, they played a mere 3 songs that I recognize. They played mostly new material, and that's amazing for a band that's been around since 1978. Be playing mostly new material, but you know, it was still a fantastic show. But these guys, being as old as they are, they go in harder than most new bands. So
nice.
So there's that. If you do get to see if Wire come to your town, I definitely advise going to see them, because It's you know, a very underrated but very one of those very underrated but very influential bands, especially, you know, for post-punk and indie rock. So on that note, let's do the plugs. Lawrence, plug yourself.
Okay. So you can follow me on Twitter at @LOB_3. Guess what, y'all? Pure on the Roof is now on another podcasting platform to listen to, and that is Spotify. So nice. You can now find us on Spotify just by searching our name, Pure on the Roof, on there. We've been on iTunes, so you could subscribe to us on there as well. But I just want to say thank you all for that have been listening. That anyone that's listening here that's listened to the latest show we've done, which is, you've made our last episode one of the biggest episodes we've done since the first episode when we came back, almost like 130 plays in like a few days. So pretty awesome stuff. Glad to have people listening to our takes on a pretty wild time right now, to say the least, in Japanese wrestling. So
for more than one reason, which on a related note, Chris and I did just upload a pod blast for Strong Style Story talking about the lack of activity in New Japan right now because of the slight pandemic going on around the world. So I'm sure that's going to affect your side of things too, Lawrence.
Oh yeah, you mean like the companies over there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about with the coronavirus and show cancellations. I'm sure that's going to affect some things over on your side of the
it has
of the pro wrestling. Oh yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's yeah.
I mean, Isaac and Jamil and I have been discussing in our group chat, like, we're a little worried about some of these indies that aren't able to run, and are they going to be able to like stay afloat during this time, because that's not easy, because these guys live off live event gates.
Oh yeah, no, we feel you. No, I mean, we were talking about that. Well, I mean, listen to the pod blast, you'll hear what Chris and I were talking about. So and on that note, Chris.
All right, so for me, you can follow me through Twitter and Instagram. That's at Brazilian Fury, Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can also follow my other podcast, Soundtracks on the Sticks, over on Twitter at Sounds on Sticks. I'm actually excited to tell you guys that we joined the Night of the Living Geeks network for that particular podcast. So going forward, we'll be on their network of various shows, which also include Tornado Tag Radio, which is wrestling related, and they do bit of AEW, bit of MLW as well, too, in terms of their talks, and Podcastica, which is their Doctor Who podcast, I believe, and many others. John Pingo has been a good friend of the show for quite some time now, and as it turns out, him and Jeff have a lot in common in their Doctor Who fandom, so I guess we'll eventually have to get him in Podcastica at some point.
Yeah, well, you just, go ahead and out me as the Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, I might as well. Sure.
I probably have already outed myself anyway, but, you know.
quite some time ago.
Even on this show. So John Pagle did guest on this show at one.
Yes, indeed. So, eventually, we'll have some more episodes coming up within the next week or so. Jordan and I just need to decide on what game we're doing next, basically. So whether it's a fighting game that we go into just to analyze those tracks or try to do another platformer like a Mega Man 2. Yeah, there's many options out there for this sort of thing. So we'll figure it out and get it to you.
As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at StrongSawStory without the E in style. My personal Twitter is at GDWessel, 2 S's 1 L. My other podcast, Busting Balls, will have a new show by this weekend or at least Monday. Surprise, surprise, we'll be discussing the effects of the coronavirus on football. So, because that seems to be really about one of the only topics worth talking about these days. So, with that, Lawrence, Chris, any final words?
No.
Okay.
No. Thanks again, guys. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, we'll be back on our usual slot on Wednesday. So, thanks for listening. We'll see you in 5 days. Yeah, 5 days. We'll see you.